Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. You know, Tara, I have to tell you, when we started bringing home older children, school issues were so difficult to navigate.
Oh, girl.
Really, and I remember a sweet friend looked at me. She was my daughter's teacher, first grade, and she said, Lynette, she's not going to make it here. Mm. And reality hit me in the face.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where to turn. It had not happened to me before, you know. And,
right.
And then as we brought home an even older child, I began to realize this is the norm, right? Mm-hmm. And I knew the Lord said, walk in love, you know, walk in love and respond to people in love. And it got really, really trying.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved to this part of the country, moved deeper south, and then entered public school, I had just a sweet, kind teacher pull me aside and say the same thing again. Mm-hmm. And so navigating school options, mm-hmm. Getting a child from, one of mine was on their third language,
mm-hmm.
and integrated into the school system, was very heartbreaking.
It is. And then you add on top of those things that your family doesn't all look the same, and you get questions, and then your children are fielding questions, and it just is hard. So on that note,
yes.
Today we are super excited to welcome Holly Clark. She is a sweet friend of ours from Kentucky. We went to church together there, and she and her husband, Brad, are parents to three wonderful girls adopted internationally with very special needs. And so advocating for the girls in the school system in different arenas has been honestly one of the things that I was so encouraged and inspired about by Brad and Holly, among multiple other things. But I always was so encouraged at how she did this with such grace.
Yes.
And so that's really why I thought it would be awesome to have her on the podcast today. So, Holly, we are super excited to have you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
So, Holly, I know that before you guys had children, the Lord had really placed a love in your heart for children that were in vulnerable places, and that you and Brad did a lot of different things with kids that are from hard places before you were even parents. So tell us a little bit about that.
It all started in elementary school with a wonderful mom who dropped something off for her daughter. And I looked over and there was a little girl holding this woman's leg. And I kept looking because I knew this little girl was not her daughter. And I couldn't figure out why this little girl was clinging to her. And I said something to my mom and she said, oh, she's a foster mom. And she just got a little girl last night. And I, in elementary school, I'd never heard of foster care. And she explained that not all children were able to be loved in a loving home, and explained the need for foster care. And I think God just really impacted my heart that day. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with such wonderful parents, and I was so sad that there were children that were out there that weren't getting the same experience that I was. And I relentlessly begged my parents to become foster parents and said I would take care of the child in my room. And I did a big sales pitch. And I have to give my parents a lot of credit because they actually went through fostering classes. And my mom wanted to do it, and my dad did not feel comfortable. And I do think you both have to agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just thankful that they went through that with open minds and open hearts. And I told them that I appreciated them doing that. And one day when I was older, I was going to foster children or adopt. And so to me, that shows when we're out meeting different people, just like that mom with a little girl, I went back, you know, 30 years later with my kids and told her, by her having that little girl with her, how she impacted my heart, how God had used her.
Wow.
So it started way back when. But before we had kids, I volunteered at Cincinnati Children's Hospital with kids, giving their parents a break. And then Brad and I were both volunteer counselors for foster children with a camp called Camp Two Belong. And we got to know a lot of wonderful foster kids. And later that led me to be a CASA representing children in court.
That's amazing. So when did you guys start, or what led you to start? I mean, what led you to start the adoption process to grow your family in that way?
When Brad and I were dating, I told him that God puts different things on different people's hearts, and I felt called that that was my one thing in life that I knew for sure that he wanted me to do besides marry my wonderful husband. But even when we were somewhat casually dating, I told him that whoever I married, that I wanted to make sure they were open to either adopt or foster. It was such a strong calling, and I felt like I would not feel fulfilled if I didn't, when God put something on your heart so strongly, to not follow that just didn't feel right to me. And so Brad prayed about it, and he said that he would be open to that. So our plan was always to have one biological, and then we were going to adopt two. And then as our journey went along, we didn't get pregnant. And most people I know who don't get pregnant, you know, go to infertility specialists and they fully investigate everything. And Brad and I had total peace that we didn't need to look into anything, that we, that God put that on our hearts to adopt. And that was the path we would go on. And if we had a biological, that would be a blessing. And if we adopted all of our children, that would equally be a blessing. Mm-hmm. So for us, that was always a plan A. And some people will say, well, I didn't have to adopt. And to us, adoption for anyone is not having to adopt. It's being blessed by a child to add to your family. It's not a have to do. It's that you're blessed to be able to do.
I just love hearing that story, Holly, because my older kids did that as well. And we're seeing this generation that's coming behind us, a lot of our church planners, and that adoption's their plan A. And they feel called to it. And it is just a blessing to see the Lord raise the body up to open their homes to vulnerable children. But you've done something else unique that I really want to talk to you about today. And when we moved to this new state, my neighbors were not accustomed to seeing such a multiracial family, nor was the school system. And so that first year we came here kind of as the school year had already began. And so we kind of, you know, kind of just as best we could got through that first, the remaining of that first school year. And then the next year, I thought, this is not going to catch me off guard this year. And so the first day of second grade, I take my beautiful daughter and my little Ethiopian, and we are the first ones to sign up to bring in a family picture for show and tell day and introduce our family. And so that really helped spearhead a lot of conversations and to just kind of lay our cards on the table and say, this is our family. This is who we are. We love our daughter. You know, I don't look like her, but I know you've done a lot of that and you have a lot of great suggestions to help families with that. So just share with us how you did that and how you were proactive in helping your children in the classroom.
Well, before I share mine, I love that you did that and the first family so you could make sure that you could, and you could tell your story the way you wanted it told, because sometimes kids don't have the words. You know, when I think of myself at a young age, I wouldn't have had the words to explain it. I know the question my kids got the most is but who are your real parents? And so my kids were like, are you not real?
Exactly.
I would say, pinch me. And they, you know, like they're kind of hesitantly pinching me because they don't know if I'm really giving them permission to pinch me. And then I, you know, dramatically say, ouch, I'm real. And we'd laugh about it. And I'd say, but you also do have real birth family. And then we would talk about, we have extended family in our family in California and Texas. And so I would branch that off. You have your original birth family, and then you have our family. And then we have relatives in California and Texas. And wow, we have family all over the world and all over the United States. And when people would ask them when they were younger, they got it all the time. Where were you born or where are you from? And so one of mine is really shy when she's not with family or close friends, and that would just shut her down and she wouldn't answer. And so I started saying, oh, well, she was born in China and I was born in Chicago. And then I'd say, girls, where is daddy born? They'd say Texas. And then one time I said, can you guess where this lady was born? And my daughter said, Pennsylvania. And the woman said, oh my gosh, I was born in Pennsylvania. So trying to take that, you know, take the heat off of them and kind of make it fun.
Right.
Especially when they're shy, that just kind of puts them in a tough spot. Right.
One time a lady at the grocery store asked our daughter, or she didn't even ask our daughter. She looked at me and said, "Where's she from?"
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite.
And Mary Tess said, "Louisville."
Exactly.
It was hilarious. I thought it was really funny. And because she was old enough to realize the lady was not even addressing her, and she's standing right there. And the lady said, "No, where are you really from?" And Mary Tess said, "I'm really from Louisville, Kentucky." It was hilarious. But
that's great.
So I think you're right. Taking the kind of the heat off and the pressure off and doing it in a way that is disarming to everyone so that the girls don't feel like they're just being show ponies, which they're not. And we don't want them to feel that way.
But you can't always be there, right? When those questions come up. And so our kids are in the classrooms. Most of our kids are in the classrooms more than they're with us. Mm-hmm. And so we do want to hear how you prepared the classroom for your girls. Mm-hmm.
I am by no means an expert, but I would go in a couple days early once we found out who the teacher was going to be, and I would ask if I could. I'd leave a note or call and say, "I would love to share some information with you if I could have 15 minutes. And I would go in and just connect with the teacher and share their story in a way, and I'm only sharing what parts I would want repeated because some of that is private. Mm-hmm. But I'm sharing it in a way that she can repeat that, that if someone asks a question or she needs to intervene, that she knows the right words. And, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about their child was abandoned and that's written in some of, you know, paperwork. But I think we easily could have been born in another country and we could have loved a child so much and just not been able to make an adoption plan. And that doesn't mean that we would be abandoning our child. It's a different way of making a plan mm-hmm. when you have very few choices. So I would always say that our children were placed somewhere that they were found quickly and talk about their time that they were, that they lived in an orphanage. And the minute we could rush there, my kids loved that we rushed to get them, mm-hmm. like the urgency that we were so excited. And so I would talk to the teacher about different things that might come up, different questions and how to answer that. And one thing I learned when we would go in and talk about adoption every year, I think just like biological kids, all adopted kids are just as different as all biological. So I would ask my kids every year, "Do you want to go in and talk about adoption?" Mm-hmm. And we were in a group called Chinese Sisters. And some of the girls, as they got older, didn't want to talk about it. And I asked my oldest, and she's like, "Oh, yeah, they love it. They love the food you bring and love to talk about adoption." So we would bring in Lo Mein. I would go to the local Chinese place and get food and Mandarin oranges. And we would read a book about adoption and explain it to the kids. And the kids had a lot of sweet questions. But I would ask my oldest what part she wanted. Did she want to hold the book? Did she want to read some of it? And so one year she said, I think she was probably in third grade, and she was a huge reader, but math was not her favorite subject. And I said, "Before we start, do you want to say anything about adoption?" And she said, "Oh, yes. You are so lucky I'm adopted. Otherwise, you'd be in math right now." just thought, you know, like their perspective of it.
Exactly. That is too funny. I love the way that you give them ownership of it.
Exactly.
So you're teaching them how to share their story in a way that makes it comfortable for them and helping them understand that they only need to share the parts of their story that they feel comfortable telling, that they don't have to tell everything, and that it's their decision. So you're giving them ownership of it, which I really, really love. Last year when we moved here, because we moved to a new area and people didn't know us and didn't know our story like they did when we all went to church together, our son went to class and the teacher emailed me the next day and said, "Hey, I really need to talk to you." And basically she was pretty shocked at some of the things Isaac shared when it was sort of, "Tell us about yourself." And he like laid out his whole entire story, which he mm-hmm. had never done before. And I said, so I talked to the teacher. She wanted to know if the story was true. I said, "It is indeed all true," and which was shocking to her. And then when Isaac came home, I said, "Hey, buddy, I talked to your teacher today, and she said you shared your story." And his eyes got really big. I think he was sort of waiting for, should I have done that? Should I have not done that? And I said, "Honey, it's your story. That's perfectly all right. But I didn't know you were going to do that. And he said, well, I just kind of wanted to, you know, keep questions at bay because I know when you come to a school party and you're white, they're going to wonder. So he was like preemptively like, okay, everybody, here's the lowdown. This is what's going to happen when I have to turn in my picture for Family Tree. My parents are white and I'm Ethiopian.
And it's just a prime example that even though maybe our children are not voicing it, they're thinking about it.
Right.
And it has to be addressed. And Holly, I just love the way you go into the classroom and you're, as Tara said, your daughter took ownership and you laid it out there where everyone could understand it. Because sometimes my first response, honestly, like, where are you from to my kids or how much did that cost? That's my favorite, right? I want to respond in anger. And, you know, this morning I was in Ephesians 5, and the Lord said, as I said earlier, walk in love as Christ loved us. And then in verse 7, he says, you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. And Holly, I think by doing that, you bring light to children. You bring enlightenment to the situation of my daughter's darker than I am, and this is why. And this is how the Lord built our family. Could even to be able to say that in the public school system to children, because I was influenced in the third grade. I began to realize the need for foster care in the third grade. My job every once a week in the third grade was to give a little girl in our class a bath. And so I realized the need that, that children had and how so many children did not have what they needed and were, you know, not being taken care of. And that happened to you at a young age. Now the Lord is, you know, doing that again with you and giving you the opportunity to go in and to take food and, like you said, coins from their birth country or just books to read about adoption or a mandarin orange that makes children think outside the box and realize, yeah, we all look different, you know, and we give glory to God.
I completely agree. I feel like at the first time I did the adoption talk, I didn't bring in anything extra, so it was all adoption, and that was fine. They were younger, but I think as they get older, to kind of deflect, like, you can talk about it and it's beautiful. And then instead of having it end right there, I think kids love language is food.
And yes, having, it's mine.
It gives your child something instead of like, okay, we do all this adoption talk and then your mom leaves and then they're just there. It goes on to the food, they're passing around the coins, you know, the books, the different things. And it gives your child something kind of fun to end it on, and the kids are all, thank you. And it ends up being this really positive experience.
And celebrating the whole culture. So the girls are so proud of all that they have come from.
Absolutely. Well, Holly, our time is about over today, but I wanted you to share one more thing. With one of our children, we came home. She was in the hospital for quite a while, and it was a tough time. And it would always throw the doctors and the nurses off when they walked in the room. And here I had my little Ethiopian princess, and here I am, you know. And they were kind of confused. Now, are you mom? Are you a caretaker? Just a caretaker? Or so you did a very interesting thing at the hospital that I think everyone should do. And I wanted you to kind of share about what you did with your family photo at the hospital.
We have on the outside of the hospital door, so when they're inpatient, often I'll put scripture. A lot of times Psalm 139, I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And then I'll do a family picture and then an individual picture of our child. Because when our youngest had spinal surgery, I didn't realize how much she was going to swell from that surgery, and she did not look at all. She just looked miserable as any of us would look. And by having the pictures on the door, instead of just walking in and she was another patient who was laying flat and not very happy, they said, oh my gosh, she's so cute, and your whole family. And it led to a lot of beautiful adoption and God talks about his calling on our life and life as a Christian. And it just led to a lot of open doors and people wanting information. But more importantly, for your child, I think the care that they got was someone who's connecting with them in a different way.
I think the thing we have to remember, and you do so incredibly well, is that we are, while our children are young and as we're guiding them into adulthood, we're our child's advocate. So our responsibility as parents to all of our children is to point them to Christ, protect them, lead them, And in these different ways that you're doing it, you're doing all of those things and you're celebrating your children and you're advocating for your children in ways that just, I mean, you just emit grace. If you ever get a chance to meet Holly Clark, you should, because she's just a gracious woman and everything you do points your family and points others to Christ. And we are so appreciative. So thanks so much for your time, Holly. I just appreciate you so much.
Thank you guys so much, and I feel the same way about both of you.
You have been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit namb.net/sendrelief.